What's up, y'all? Want to welcome you back to the Hunt Stand Podcast, Season 2, and this is your host, Will Cooper. The Hunt Stand Podcast is your weekly source for insightful conversations with veteran hunters, dedicated outdoor enthusiasts, and top industry personnel. I'm going to have guests on here who are true experts in their field, diving into the captivating world of our industry and the great outdoors. With each episode, you, the listener, will receive invaluable knowledge, tips, and guidance on how to enhance your skills in the wild and in life. Tune in to be entertained, informed, and driven to reach new heights. The Hunt Stand Podcast is brought to you by Yamaha and its full line of class-defining, adventure-seeking motorcycles, ATVs, and side-by-side vehicles. The Hunt Stand Podcast is also brought to you by Springfield Armory and their lineup of Model 2020 Waypoint rifles. And finally, the Hunt Stand Podcast is brought to you by StealthCam. It's never been easier to go wireless with the Command Pro app. Capture high-quality photos and videos of all the action wherever you hunt with StealthCam's advanced cameras and data plans tailored to your needs. So make sure you check out their website today, StealthCam.com. Hunt Stand Podcast Season 2, buckle up. It's going to be a good ride. Let's go. What's going on, everybody? It's your host, Will, coming back for a new episode of the Hunt Stand Podcast. On today's episode, we're going to be getting on Hunt Stand Pro contributor Josh Honeycutt to talk about how to get turkey hunting permissions. Now, me being from Texas, it's a little bit unfamiliar to me because you got to know somebody because property down here is heavily guarded by landowners. So it's pretty hard to go and knock on doors like it might be up in the Midwest, Northeast, wherever you are. But if you have that capability, Josh is going to bring y'all some tips and tactics per se about how to go about getting permission to hunt on property the right way, and specifically using Hunt Stand as well. So if you're looking to do that this spring, you got some turkeys in the neighborhood, or you've got some property nearby that you've seen turkeys on a lot and you want to find out to hunt it, then you don't want to miss out on today's podcast with Josh. So if you haven't yet, make sure you download the Hunt Stand app. We've got the free version, we've got the pro version, and then new this past fall, we got Pro Whitetail. So if you want to unlock all the features of Hunt Stand, upgrade today. And we want to thank everybody for tuning in to Hunt Stand Podcast Season 1. Y'all blew it out of the water, so I'm having a lot of fun on Season 2. We've got some good guests on so far, and we're going to keep the ball rolling. So I'm going to quit rambling, and here's Josh Honeycutt with how to teach y'all how to get better turkey hunting permissions. Well, Josh, man, welcome back to the Hunt Stand Podcast. I want to do a quick intro real quick, but before we get into today's podcast, you know, let's talk about what we're going to talk about. And primarily, we're going to be talking about turkey hunting permissions. You know, turkey season is coming up. You know, it's started or it's beginning to start in different places of the country like Florida. And so there's people out there that they may not have their own private land. Public land might be, you know, the dirty grind, and they might have pieces of property near where they live that they may see flocks of turkeys and they don't know how to go and ask for permission. So we're going to go into that today. I'm going to pick your brain on that. But before we do, you've been on the podcast before, but for those that may not know who you are, kind of give us that 30-foot tree stand view of what I call.
Yeah, just a redneck from Kentucky who likes to shoot critters and write about it. But, you know, I've been an outdoor writer for about 12 years now, 13 years now. You know, I've been working in the hunting industry for that span of time. Most of those years, I've been a freelancer and contractor, working for a number of different companies in the hunting industry and fishing industries, you know, such as Hunt Stand, obviously. I have worked for, you know, in kind of a full-time capacity for other organizations such as the National Wild Turkey Federation. I worked for them full-time for 2 years. It's been a while now, but now I'd say that was 2014 and 15. So that's been a few years, but, worked for them for a couple of years, worked for other companies, in greater capacities like Realtree Camouflage, but for by and large, my career, I've been a content producer for a lot of different media and manufacturers, manufacturing companies in the industry.
Sweet, man. And what was it this past deer season? I saw you started your own photography IG page too, haven't you?
Yeah. So I wouldn't consider myself an expert in that by any means, but I have jump-started that process this past year. I don't have a complete gallery for sale just yet, but that is in the works. And eventually, you know, I'll be adding that to the list of too many things that I'm trying to do.
Yeah, like you were talking about earlier, drinking from the fire hose, man. What's the IG handle for that? Just for those that are out there that, you know, may want to give you a follow or check it out.
Yeah, I got to do a better job of updating it than I have been here recently, but it's at Honeycutt Creative, and just all things wildlife, mostly focused on whitetails and eastern turkeys, but, you know, coyotes, you know, occasionally birds, you know, all things wildlife is going to be the focus. And, of course, I'm an outdoor writer, and so a lot of that content I'm using and pairing with the content that, I create for all the different magazines and websites and brands that I produce content for. But eventually, you know, I'll be selling standalone photography as well. But that's where you can find it at. Yeah.
Sweet, man. Can't wait to see more of it. So today's podcast, we're talking turkey hunting, man. Are you getting ready for it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Looking forward to it.
When does season start for you out there?
Yeah, so here in Kentucky, it's always the weekend that's kind of closest to April 15th. It kind of shifts a little bit each year. Sometimes it's like April 13th, 14th. Sometimes it's, you know, as late as April 17th, 18th, you know, in there. But it's always right around the middle of April is when we have our opening weekend.
Okay, so that's super similar to Texas. You know, like our state's pretty much split in half. They take, I think it's Interstate 90 or Highway 90. They basically divides most of the state. So we've got the north zone, south zone, I think starts here pretty quick, but north zone doesn't start for me till April 1st. So got a little time to get ready. So for those that are in that scouting mindset, they're trying to get all their gear ready. They're looking at properties. And like I said earlier, they may be kind of more or less been fatigued and they're just kind of giving up on public land, or they may not have private land, but they've seen turkeys in the neighborhood, neighboring properties, got some flocks. I'm not too familiar with it myself, just being from Texas. You know how privatized it is here. And so permission here, I mean, it's similar, but I haven't had to do it much. But you, on the other hand, you've got some experience doing that. So I kind of want to pick your brain today about how to ask for permission when it comes to turkey hunting. And you've got a pretty good process on how to do that, don't you?
Yeah. You guys guard the gates with guns and cannons down there in Texas, but,
and barbed wire,
Yeah. And yeah. So I appreciate that though. No shade from me, but yeah. So it is a little easier, you know, in the Midwest and the East, to get permission for turkey hunting. You know, as an example here, I hunt four properties here at home for deer. And I have access to about three times that much ground for turkeys. And that just kind of goes to show how definitely there are fewer turkey hunters for one. And people are less protective about their turkey hunting too. So yeah. Even if they do kind of happen to turkey hunt occasionally, they don't care to let somebody else come in there and hunt too. Whereas it's a much different story for deer. So for people who don't necessarily have the access they would love to have for deer, don't necessarily translate that to not having or not going to have access or the impossibility of gaining access for turkeys, because it's a lot easier, much easier to get access for turkey hunting than it is for deer hunting. And fortunately, if you get to know landowners that way, you know, and not just through turkey hunting, but through coyote hunting, even easier to get permission to do that. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of work and develop relationships with landowners through coyote hunting, through trapping, through turkey hunting, eventually you can get that access for deer in some, not always, but in some instances. So it's a good gateway to develop relationships that you need to have with those landowners. And there definitely is a process that you can use to kind of help find properties and then gain access to them.
Gotcha. So kind of walk us through, I mean, how would you define your process? You know, like there's other people I've talked to about this, and they've got like all these different steps. They might have an if-then scenario, or, you know, like if this happens, then I'm going to say this and then do this. I mean, do you have that extensive of a process? Or, I mean, how do you go about asking for permission? I mean,
Yeah. I try not to be too cyborgish about it, but you know, it definitely is, you know, going to be kind of fall into categories. You know, if you're in this scenario, then you use these tactics. If you're in this scenario, you use these tactics. And so it's definitely important to really kind of have those plans, as you mentioned, going into it. You know, I try not to be a robot about things, but there definitely are certain responses that you should have given the situation that you find yourself in.
Okay. So let's kind of, I think a lot of the listeners out there are probably thinking about, they've probably got landowner A, who has X amount of property, but they've seen flocks of turkeys out there. They've already got deer hunters, but they know nobody turkey hunts out there. So do you just randomly go up on doors and you just start knocking, or do you try and develop that relationship by calling? You know, obviously you're using HuntStand to look up property info. What's kind of step one for Josh in this whole process?
Yeah. And that's one of those things where it's going to depend, in my opinion. So if it's close to home, if it's people that I know, you know, maybe I already know who these people are, that I know the landowners are, but I haven't necessarily asked them for permission. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes a phone conversation or a visit to their property is going to be sufficient. You know, phone call, you know, generally it's harder for somebody to tell you no in person. You know, yeah. They're going to be less likely to tell you no in person if you're right there in front of them versus over the phone or an email. The less connected you are, the more mediums or more distance that you put between yourself and that individual during that conversation, the easier it's going to be for them to reject that request. So you do kind of increase your odds of gaining permission by asking in person. Doesn't guarantee it, obviously, but it increases the odds. When you look at the percentage breakdowns of yeses to nos from, you know, sending out letters versus making a phone call versus asking in person, you're going to have a greater degree of success on the in-person requests than you will. And those others, as I mentioned, it's just easier for them to say no. But the situation that I find myself in dependent or influences exactly how I make that request. So like I said, mm-hmm. if I already have a relationship with them and they're not too far away from my home, then I definitely like to do that in person. Whether that's visiting them at their house or seeing them out in public somewhere where you know you're going to cross paths with them, whatever the case might be.
Okay.
So that's when I like to ask in person. If I'm on a road trip and I'm doing impromptu asks, then obviously in person knocking on a door is good too. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to gain permissions well away from home in advance, sending out letters is a great way to do that. And HuntStand is the perfect tool for that, because obviously you can find properties that you like, that look good, you know, via the different app layers that are available on the app. And then you use the property info information, which offers the address, the mailing address for that property right there in that, as you well know. So all you got to do is draft a letter and send it to them. And it's really easy to do that. You don't have to do personalized letters for every single property that you send a yeah. letter to. You know, you just create a template and then leave blanks for the necessary changes in that information. So you kind of streamline that process. And it costs you 60 cents to do it. I think that's the cost of a stamp now, yeah. versus however much gas it takes to drive to said location, especially if you're bouncing around a lot mm-hmm. of different counties or even different states in this process. It's much, much cheaper. Even if you have to send out 200 letters just to get two or three yeses versus, you know, driving to all these properties or even driving to half that many properties to get two or three yeses, you're going to come out way ahead as far as how much money you spend to gain that access, sending out a bunch of letters in mass versus, you know, driving to all those different locations.
Dude, I think you just brought up something that people my age, I mean, how old are you now, Josh?
30.
Okay. Wait, you're 30?
Mm-hmm.
Man. Kind of making me feel old.
Do I look old or do I look young?
I was gonna put like that 36, 37 mark on you.
Well, that's not terrible then.
Okay, so I'm 31. Yeah. So, I mean, you and I are kind of in that same mindset. But wouldn't you agree that a lot of people probably around our age and much younger, they probably don't think about what you just said, and that's sending mm-hmm. letters.
Yeah. I mean, nobody has landlines anymore. Nobody had mailboxes will be gone here in another 10 years.
No, I don't think so.
I'm joking. But I guess that's just my facetious way of talking about how things have changed. But yeah, no, definitely. It's not something that people think about for sure, but it is still an effective method, especially when you look at the age of land ownership. Mm-hmm. Most of the landowners out there are older landowners. Most yeah. of them are.
Yeah.
And so they hold more value or place more value on a written note mm-hmm. than people, millennials, and even some Gen Xers. you know, especially if they're baby boomer generation, they're going to put more emphasis and more value on that handwritten note. And like I said, you can have a typed up letter, but throw in that personalized note on there where, you know, you sign your name or, write their name in or whatever it is. And maybe, throw a PS in there that's handwritten with some, you know, slight note or something that's personalized to them, if you're able to do that and have enough information to do so. But yeah, for sure. Definitely don't overlook the power of a letter. It can still work.
Man, that is so true. You know, I think so many kids and, you know, older adults and whatnot, I mean, whoever it may be, a lot of people just want to try and do it the easy way through text message, phone call. And while, yes, that may work in some situations and in some scenarios, but like you said, when it comes to that landowner that they want to do it the old school way and they get that letter in, it adds a little bit more value to it and it makes you, in my opinion, appear to be more of a trustworthy, honest, true person that's not going to, you know, take advantage of their land and do wrong. So
absolutely. And that's a good point, because a lot of these landowners, they don't want somebody, you know, some knucklehead on their land running around that's going to rut it up with tires and, you know, throw trash everywhere. And if you send a professional letter to them, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to identify you, you know, first impressions are everything. And so whenever they see that as the first impression of you, then you are much more likely to make a good impression. And you can even go as far as throwing your photo into that letter. So copy, you know, if it's a printed letter, copy and paste a photo of you in there so that they can see your face and stuff like that, just to personalize it even more. And obviously make sure that's a good professional photo. You don't want to, you know, be throwing back, you know, a sip of something in your like a Facebook profile pic from college or something like that. But make sure it's a professional photo, obviously. But anyway, yeah, be professional. Show your true self. Mm-hmm. Obviously, don't tell them somebody you're not. But you know, show yourself in the right light for sure.
Yeah, 1000%. So you know, that kind of comes down to, you know, I was looking at a piece that you wrote about a year or two ago on different tips to ask for turkey permission. You know, you've got essentially it's 25 steps, and you know we're talking about appearance right now. You know, we've talked about the letter, and we've kind of gone into the whole appearance thing. And I love that one of the things that you've got in this is making sure that you're wearing the right clothing whenever you go to step up on their door. It's mm-hmm. all about that first impression, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think sometimes it's best to not work. Definitely don't go up in full camo, because that can be intimidating. No. and it throws up red flags. Not in a bad way. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with camo, okay. But you know, oftentimes if they see you coming from all the way down the driveway and you got full camo on, they've already gotten them. Oh, he's coming to ask for hunting permission. Mm-hmm. No. So if you got on street clothes that are fairly, you know, I wouldn't wear a tuxedo or anything like that, but you know, just good, clean, you know, business casual clothing is usually the best option for that.
Man, that's a good thing to keep in mind. You know, and one of the other things you talk about, you kind of touched on it earlier. You know, you kind of gain access. You can gain access through these properties and get to do more and more. Like if you start out by doing predator hunting, because I feel like a lot of landowners look at that as something that, you know, obviously they're probably either got livestock, they've got deer, and they understand that, you know, coyotes, bobcats, other predators, they take after fawns and go after anything, you know, turkey, everything. So getting your foot in the door with predators is right, and just kind of slowly gaining more and more access. But one of the things you talked about too is when you're going up and asking for this permission, is explaining your role as a hunter conservationist. Kind of explain that to us.
Yeah, it's definitely important to talk about that aspect of it whenever you're going and meeting these landowners. You know, convey to them that, you know, yes, you're a hunter and you take resources off the property, mm-hmm. but you do so in a manner that helps the resource, because obviously, you know, overpopulation can be issues, you know, disease can be issues. You know, a healthy ecosystem requires removal of all species. Yeah. And in the modern world that we live in, where we've so radically driven predators off the scene, and I shouldn't say that we've radically driven them off the scene, but in comparison to, you know, 100, 200, 300 years ago, they just aren't as prevalent.
Right.
And that wasn't something that happened by design. Well, I guess initially it was years and years and years ago when they first settled America, they did remove predators by design because, you know, the settlers saw them as competition. So that what, you know, and we're talking 300 years ago, but so that has led to a much, much smaller predator population today than it used to be in the environment before America, so to speak, before the United States. So it's important that hunters continue to fill that role. Now that predators don't necessarily fill that role as much, and we still have predators, obviously, coyotes, bobcats, in some places, you know, mountain lions, bears. So there's still predators. And honestly, the predators have started coming back compared to where they were 100 years ago, or, you know, even 50 years ago. So hunters are actually having to decrease some of their role in that, especially the past several decades where black bears have really come back since, you know, 50, 60, 75 years ago, when coyotes crossed the Mississippi and came into the eastern United States, and they've obviously had a major impact. So hunters have less of a role in that now. And honestly, state agencies are having to restrict some of that hunter harvest to accommodate that and account for that. But talking to these landowners about that aspect of it, that you're there to help preserve the resource, to help analyze it, determine what it needs, what it doesn't need, and that you're going to make sure that resource, in the best of your ability, obviously there's many such things that are out of your control, but for those that are in your control, you're going to leave that resource in as good or better of a place than it was whenever you found it there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really key, super important, that when you're doing this, to not make it appear as, oh, I just want to be there to kill the biggest buck, or I want to kill the biggest tom and turkeys you got. I want to kill them all. Like, putting forth that good foot that you're there to help be a good steward to their land and take care of it, I think speaks volumes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of ways that you can actually take act, you know, other than just say, hey, I'm going to make sure I don't mess things up. There's things you can do that take actionable, as long as, you know, in the goodwill and permission of the landowner, there's things you can do to help that landowner, such as bringing in private land biologists. You know, they might not be aware that they have access to private land biologists through their state agencies. They might not be aware that, hey, they can enroll into government programs that pays them, or at least funds them, to improve the habitat on their property, which increases their property value. So there's things that you can do, as long as you're educated in these areas yourself, to help those landowners that cost nothing to you. It makes the hunting even better on the property, and it helps that landowner out because it helps the wildlife, which they probably value, and B, it increases the property value by doing so. So there's a lot of ways you can take actionable. Again, don't do it without the permission of them. Just convey this information to them, let them take it from there, basically, unless they give you the go ahead to be that steward. But yeah, definitely ways that you can help them out, for sure. And show them that you care, you know, about all the different stakeholders, which is the wildlife, the landowner, the land, and yourself while you're there.
You know, the other thing that I want to talk about with you, I think people kind of, they've got this negative connotation when they hear these words, or, you know, you kind of cringe when you hear this stuff. You talk about legal protection, making sure you offer that with the landowners, because that's very important. I mean, talk to us about that.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot, it's crazy how much has changed even in my 30 years of the frequency and the prevalence of lawsuits with different things. You know, I mean, you stub your toe on a stump and somebody's suing you, but, or you're suing somebody else, but, yeah. So I don't believe in all that, you know, obviously, unless it's completely merited and something needs to take action, but there's so many instances where, you know, these frivolous lawsuits shouldn't happen. And that spooks landowners. A lot of times that's the primary reason that they don't let people on their property anymore. Fortunately, there's an answer for that. Multiple answers for that. You can get very cheap insurance for these landowners, and you can, if they're willing to let you on without having to pay for a lease. And even if they are only going to let you on with a lease, I think it's important that insurance is involved, just for lack of a better reason, then sometimes it can gain you the access and remove that obstacle.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's insane how many people just want to sue because of the most ridiculous things. When it comes to legal protection, you know, you might just be asking for permission because you've seen a certain field, or, you know, there's a woodlot with turkeys in it, and you just basically want to go into go hunt for a weekend. You just want the permission to try and kill a bird for a weekend. And whether or not you come back to that, I mean, is that a situation where you're looking to try and offer any kind of lease agreement, or that's just you're trying to put best foot forward, make it well known that you're a trustworthy person that with this landowner, so that you try and get that permission for that weekend?
I mean, I think, you know, it is important that, you know, because the land, you know, a lot of people gripe and fuss about how landowners don't let anybody hunt anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, and I understand that, you know, back in the day, everybody hunted everybody's property. No. Everybody had permission to hunt everybody's property, and that's changed. And I do get that aspect of it, but at the same time, I also get the other side of it. You know, those landowners are the one not only paying for that property, but they're paying the taxes on it too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're paying everything that, you know, it costs to own that property. And it's a resource. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with asking, for permission. And I think hunters should, you know, strike a bargain with them. But even if you get to hunt it for free, I think that hunters should do something for those landowners to help them out too. You know, simply because, you know, it's their land. So yeah, even if you get to hunt it for free, like I said, offer to pay for the insurance to cover it. But in addition to that, I would even encourage people to, you know, go help them out for a day. You know, if you're only going to be hunting for a week, spend one day helping them on the property. If you're going to be hunting for a season, you know, block out 2 or 3 days to help them, you know, around on the property, whether that's mowing their yard or fixing up an old barn or whatever it is, you know, just show them that you care. You know, don't just take, you know, give back too. And it might not even be that. They might not need that. They might not want that. But you know, again, you could go back to the helping them to increase the property value by helping the wildlife, you know, through the aid of government programs where they can make money, or private land biologists who can, you know, help, you know, advise on their property and wildlife too. So there's a lot of different ways that you can give back to that landowner. And it may be something as simple as sending them a thank you card and a $50 gift certificate to a local restaurant, you know, but just showing that you care.
Big time things to think about there. You know, I feel like it's always kind of awkward when somebody lets you hunt for free. It kind of creates a weird vibe at times. Like, you almost don't know what to do. But I think hearing you say those things, it's really good for people to hear that. I want to talk about, you talked about these government programs. You know, I think a lot of listeners are probably, their ears perk up whenever they hear that. You know, they probably want to know, obviously different states have different programs, but from where you are, what are some of these programs? Like, tell me like what some of these programs are that are offered to the private landowner that helps out.
Yeah, I mean, so there are so many different ones. I mean, there's long lists, and not all of them pay, mm-hmm. you know, the landowner to enroll their acreage, but sometimes even if they don't pay to enroll their acreage, they pay to make the habitat changes.
Yeah.
Or they help fund a percentage of it.
Yeah.
One of the best ways to go about, because a lot of these programs are region specific or state specific, even county specific. So, mm-hmm. You know, something that might be available in one location won't be available in another. That's just the nature of it, because most of these programs are regional focused or regional centric to basically address issues or needs within those habitat types. And it could be something like preserving a butterfly in a place where, you know, they were once abundant and are now rare, or preserving a mussel in a river, you know, whatever it is, you know, there's different programs in different places. So some of the big ones, obviously, that are more notable, though, you know, CRP, that's a huge one. It's kind of nationwide. So that's the Conservation Reserve Program, CREP. So CREP is a very similar program. A lot of the here in Kentucky, anyway, I'm in Kentucky, so I'm speaking to Kentucky. But a lot of the CRP acreages have been, and CREP acreages have been coming out simply because they've reduced those contracts significantly. I think now they basically get paid half of what they got for the past 10 and 15 year contracts that a lot of these properties were enrolled in. So a lot of those properties are coming out now and reverting back into tillable agriculture simply because they can get more money that way. But sometimes people don't want that. Sometimes they don't want, you know, people spraying on their property, or they just like the thought of having the habitat, or maybe they don't need the money. And so they'd rather just have quality habitat rather than a bunch of tillable, you know, beans and corn, which is good for habitat, good for deer.
Yeah.
When those crops are in. But honestly, when you look at the tonnage per acre, you're much better off to have a lesser, have some of that, but a lesser percentage of that. If you're just looking at a property to manage it for deer and turkey and wildlife, you're much better off to have a lot of early successional habitat, young growth grasslands and young growth trees and stuff like that, that offers a higher tonnage of food, and not just at certain times of the year when those crops are standing. So, you know, a lot of those acreages are like, oh man, he's got 200 acres and 150 of it's corn. They got all kinds of food. Well, they've got all kinds of food for a while. Then boom, the farmer takes all that away and they've got much less food. Yeah. Whereas if you had, say, like 50 acres of corn and 150 acres of good quality early successional habitat, you're offering a higher percentage of tonnage of food stuff for those animals much longer throughout the year. So some people may want to keep CRP, which offers a lot of cover and food for different species, wildlife species and stuff like that. Yeah, there's a lot of different programs out there. I got on a tangent, but lots of different programs. I mean, a lot, one really common one is a WRP, Wetland Reserve Program. That's very common in Iowa, very common throughout the Midwest. Some of the South, it's not as common in the Southeast and Northeast, but it's really, really common in the Midwest. And you can find some of that, I think, in those other regions as well. But I'd say the most common are CRP, CRP, WRP. A lot of these CRP and CREP contracts that have recently ended are going into, I can't remember the acronym. I think it's ACEP. But it's very, a very similar program. I might be wrong on that. Don't quote me on that, but it's a very similar program and concept. But under a slightly different name. So, again, one of the best ways to do that, to find out what's available to you, is look at the government programs. A lot of these are through like the USDA,
yeah,
or at least they have information on it. But you can go through your local ag extension office to figure out what's going to be best for your area or most common in your area. Find your ag extension office, which is oftentimes run through, you know, local colleges and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so being able to contact those resources, they're going to help you out and figure out what's available to you.
Gotcha. Definitely some good advice there. You know, one of the other things I want to ask you, what kind of charm is Josh Honeycutt putting on these landowners to get this permission, man? Like, give us some nuggets, give the listeners some nuggets, how they can put some of that on them.
I wasn't blessed with a pretty face, so
I don't have that
going for me. But there are a lot of things you can do. You know, if you've got kids, you know, you can bring, especially if they hunt with you. You know, if you don't go get, you know, your, you know, great niece or your cousin 3-4 times removed that you haven't seen in 2 or 3 Christmases, just to have a kid with you.
Use your kids,
but. Yeah, don't go rent a kid to get hunting pressure, or excuse me, hunting access. But you know, if you have kids, or if you take kids hunting, you know, and, you know, like if you work through, there's a lot of like I said, there's a lot of local NWTF chapters that you know, do youth hunts. So yeah. if you're trying to gain permission for that, sometimes it can help you increase the odds of getting that permission if you take along the kids that will be hunting with you, and not just kids, but adults too. Like if you're helping somebody new,
yeah,
say, hey, I'm in the process of helping, you know, such and such to basically get into the outdoors, and we're trying to find some access to do that. Mm-hmm. That can be a good way, because then they say, oh, well, you know, obviously you're not a selfish person that just wants it all for me, you know, you're trying to help somebody else. Yeah. So gaining, it's a lot easier to gain permission if a kid or a new hunter, you know, even if they're adult, are going to be part of that process or part of the picture. So that's a good way to do it. Bringing gifts is good too. Bringing some baked goods, you don't have to spend a lot of money. You know, you can find a cheap recipe and bake a bunch of goods, bake a bunch of cookies or something, and package those up and take good to them, you know, to show, hey, you know, I come with gifts. But, so obviously you can do that. If you have a pet, some people think you should, you know, bring your dog. Some people say you shouldn't. Obviously, if you know that the person is a timid person, maybe don't bring the pets along. My wife's dog. She's got a Maltipoo, so that thing's not going to threaten anything. I call it a cat, but you can bring that along. Yeah. It's not a threatening animal. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, a mice, a mouse, or even a herd of mice could do more damage than she could. So you can bring dogs, bring pets. There's a lot of different things that you can do, mm-hmm. but I think just being relatable, you know, and whatever method you find, you know, obviously have a smile on your face, you know, be very polite, don't be, and this is one of the harder things for me is because I'm, you know, by nature, I'm kind of more reserved, quieter, not a complete, you know, introvert, but, you know, I slide more toward that end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that can be hard for people. It's hard for me sometimes, you know, but that's something that you got to make sure you do is be very personable when you're doing this, or you're not going to get permission.
Absolutely. Well, man, this is all really good advice. Especially, I think it's good for a lot of young hunters to take a lot of this and think about it, you know, any hunter for that matter. But before we go today, you got any kind of nuggets or any hidden tricks up your sleeve that you do use to get some of that you haven't shared yet today?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've been talking about, you know, the article that I wrote, recently for Hunt Stand on this, you know, there's 25 different tips and steps, however you want to look at that. You know, I think, you know, obviously we won't give all those away because we want them to go check out that content, but, you know, some of the things that people can do, you know, is obviously use Hunt Stand because all the landowner information on there is going to be extremely helpful. You know, obviously you want to spend plenty of time, getting to know these people. Oftentimes you're more likely to get an answer if you don't actually ask for permission the first time you meet them or see them, especially if it's somebody, you know, that you're going to see more often. So obviously if it's somebody, you know, you'll never see, then obviously you're gonna have to make the ask or more likely to make the ask, you know, in that first meeting or conversation. But if it's somebody, you know, you see quite a bit, or you will see multiple times, two or three times, maybe get to know them that first time and then make the ask, you know, on down the road after you spent time networking, getting to know them. It's also good to do a little bit of research on whoever you're going to be asking. You know, don't be a super sleuth or anything like that, but, don't be a stalker. But, you know, if you're friends with them on social media, you know, maybe go check out their page and see what they like to do, you know, especially if you're going to try to get a gift for them, you know, see what their interests are. If they share that on social media, maybe they like, to go to this restaurant, or they like this activity, and you can kind of bring them an inexpensive gift that kind of plays off that, you know, is good to do. But to increase that the odds of gaining that, there's a lot of things you're going to do, such as things we've covered already. Mm-hmm. Obviously, start the process early on. Don't wait until the week before turkey season to ask, because somebody else has probably already asked them or already has access. You know, and so there are certain things that you definitely want to do before you get there. A lot of the things, you know, that's in this article we've already talked about, but it goes all the way back to making yourself, again, don't paint yourself in a false light, but being as personable as you can possibly be with the personality that you've been given, is really probably the most important thing, because I mean, it goes back to any aspect of life. People like to be around people they like. And if you're not somebody that this person is going to be able to like, you're probably not going to get that permission. So that's really what it all boils down to. There are other tips and tactics in that article that I think people can maybe benefit from if it's something they haven't already thought about. But that's really what it all boils down to.
Love it. Well, man, I think you have spoken a lot of good advice today for those that are on the hunt for that turkey permission land and they're trying to figure it out themselves. So I think once they listen to this, they'll get a better understanding, a better idea of how to do it. So really appreciate your time today, Josh. Real quick, tell the listeners, I know you already dropped your Honeycutt Creative page, but tell us where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, on Instagram. You can find me at Josh_Honeycutt. To find basically my primary social media where I kind of link to a lot of the articles and stuff and post about a lot of the content that I create from a writing perspective and just general hunting, general life perspective. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the Honeycutt Creative page is where it's just pure wildlife photography. So those are usually the two best for Instagram. And of course, you can look me up on Facebook as well.
Cool. Well, man, Josh, really appreciate your time today and hopping on the Hunt Stand podcast.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. Honored as well, as always.
All right, y'all, there you go. Hopefully you'll be able to take some of that from Josh today and apply it to your permission tactics. So listen to what the man said. Letters, dressing nicely, taking a dog, taking your kid with you, and just finding different ways to make sure the landowner understands that you're there to appreciate their property, that you're not going to disrespect it, you're there to take care of it, and maybe even improve it depending on what kind of permissions you get. So hopefully you'll be able to take some of the stuff from Josh today, apply it to what you're doing, get that turkey hunting land, and go bag you a big gobbler this spring. So thanks again for tuning in to the Hunt Stand podcast, and we'll see you on the next one.